This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I see you, Pete. Thanks for the update, as always. Grant and Danny on the air on this Monday on 106.7 The Fan. A Brendan Dar, Tom Daly production. No Danny with me. Craig Hoffman is in the studio. Much appreciate you guys hanging out with us, as always, to kick off your weekend. So much to get into today. NCAA tournament conversation, NFL free agency. The Redskins have three defensive players visiting them. Will they get contracts signed with any of those potential contributors and helpers on defense? Mike DeCourcy is going to join the show to talk tournament at 1 o'clock. Craig, how was the weekend?
It was great, man. I had a basketball team at a university that I went to that everyone else hated to watch because we stink on offense, but we won two basketball games, and that was good. Had my friend's birthday party. That was good.
That's a fun time.
Had a show yesterday. Had some good folks in town. Maybe talk a little bit more about that in the double play. So it was a good weekend.
Busy. Where was the birthday party?
Just a spot in Reston. A bunch of us went out. One of my friends from the gym, fellow trainers over there. So had a bunch of other trainers and clients and friends.
How much
come
talking
together.
About working out was there at that event?
Minimal.
Really?
Minimal. Yeah. I mean, it comes up because it's work. For you know, obviously more for them than it is for me. But also side work for me. But no, it's your regular, you know, we're talking about the games that are on, we're talking about other things in life, you know, just normal folks having a good time and a few beverages.
Normal fit folks.
Yeah.
Let's get into the tournament from the weekend, because there's some particulars to mow down here. First of all, UMBC boys and girls.
Yeah.
We saw a 16 seed beat a 1 seed for the first time ever. And as I tweeted, we really still haven't seen a 16 seed beat a 1 seed. We've seen a 16 seed dominate a 1 seed.
Right.
It was an embarrassing loss for Virginia, and I feel terrible for my friends that are Cavaliers fans, some of whom were in the building to watch that game. They were the best regular season team in college basketball. They were the overall number 1 seed. I do not buy into the idea that they will never win in the tournament because of the style of play or Tony Bennett's scheme or any of these things. You mentioned Syracuse, who you alluded to, a team that is defense first and offensively challenged, and they are now moving on to the Sweet 16. But I want to make this less about Virginia, frankly, and more about UMBC, because what the Retrievers did was just staggering.
It was awesome.
Every shot they took fell. They played a brilliant defensive plan that worked. It's weird, though, Craig, and I don't know if you felt this way at all. I was telling my buddies about this yesterday. I have dreamed since I was a little kid of what it's going to look like when you see a 16 seed beat a 1 seed. I've watched so many of these games. I believe 136 times that matchup has happened, 16 versus 1, and only 5 of those games have ever even been decided by 5 points or less.
Right.
Generally, you hang around for a little while and you get worked. Because of the discrepancy, when the spread was flipped, Virginia was supposed to win by 20 and UMBC won by 20, it almost, I don't want to say it was anticlimactic, but it almost wasn't as special, because I've always thought the 16 seed beats the 1 seed on the Valparaiso buzzer beater or
right,
something
right.
crazy.
100%.
It was a slow death march. For the last 12 minutes of the game, you knew Virginia was not going to win. It was crazy.
Right. And it was the same time as the Syracuse TCU game. So I'm flipping back and forth. Everyone else was just straight watching UMBC.
Yeah, nobody was watching that other
game. I was watching Cuse TCU because I went there and that's my school. And so I keep flipping back and forth. And it actually, the way it worked, the commercial breaks were timing perfectly. I got to watch a lot of game action. One game would go to commercial, flip to the other, and then I basically was going back and forth while the other was in commercial. It worked out perfectly. But every time I flip back, and then, of course, they have the score bug on top, where if I'm watching Syracuse TCU, I can keep an eye on the score of of UMBC UVA because they keep all the
sports
live.
Which I'd like
live.
To credit all of the Turner Sports Networks for doing that. And they also do a great job with, in that little bug, so it's got the channel.
Fours,
exactly. And it's got the channel. So, like, last night I'm flipping around and I see True TV and I go, okay, 1087 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
1073.
683 on Verizon
CBS,
Fios.
1017. So I'm rolling through it because each of the games tells you, here's what's going on and here's the chance.
Like, oh, crap, I need to flip back.
Exactly.
And I know where to go. Exactly. So whether I'm watching it live or watching the scorebook, I just kept waiting for the run. It's like, all right, this is cute, but eventually Virginia's going to go on a 15-0 run, close the gap, and then they're going to win by five. And it's like, wow, that was weird.
When I knew that they were going to lose, though, was about 12 or so minutes left, that under 12 timeout when I think UMBC had just gone on a little spurt again. And it dawned on me, this team is not good enough offensively to go on a 14-0 run in the next 7 minutes.
Well, I thought they would turn their defense up. I thought they would just all of a sudden, and I realized their defense is that pack line where they pack it in. It's not necessarily an aggressive style, but I figured they are so talented defensively. They will turn up their defense, force a bunch of turnovers, exploit the talent gap, and basically become like bullies and just be able to get out in transition and run. And they never did. And not only that, they offensively are so uncomfortable going fast that they couldn't. And it's simple math. It's statistics, right? The more possessions you have in a game, the bigger the talent, or the more likely it is that the talent gap, because Virginia has better players.
Not close.
The more likely it is that the talent gap comes to fruition. And in a way, Virginia's the perfect team for this to happen to. Because they play slow, there's less possessions, there's more chance of a random occurrence, and what happened was a random occurrence in the most random ways.
Yeah, I think a lot of things have to go against them that did, and UMBC's got to hit a lot of tough shots, and they did, and you give them all the credit in the world.
And they got some guys with some pretty impressive skill sets, too. Lyles is a blur.
Yeah, good
player.
He
was so fast, and it was kind of sad to see him run out of gas last night as they're trying to knock off Kansas State. And there was one layup late where you just go, oh, he's got no more legs. It's over.
And speaking of Kansas State, moving on from that one game that everyone's been talking about, this is the first time that 2-9 seeds have made up the Sweet 16 field. With Kansas State, who beat UMBC yesterday, and Florida State, who came back and shocked Xavier last night, come from behind fashion, really impressive win, quality coaching down the stretch by former Wizards head coach Leonard Hamilton. But you got 2-9 seeds in the Sweet 16. This is the first time they've been seeding this tournament since 1979.
Sheesh.
That a region will have no top four teams in the Sweet 16. Think about that. I mean, the South bracket is just one big block of red X's for everybody. The four teams that came out of the South are number 7, Nevada, and they had to go on a 32-8 run, overcome
that
a 22-point deficit with less than 11 minutes left. They move on as a 7 seed to play the ultimate Cinderella we'll get into in a minute, 11 seed Loyola Chicago. Kentucky, who everyone complained about being underseeded as a 5 and how arduous the task would be for them to get out of this bracket, they now basically have an unimpeded path if they handle their business. And in terms of the Blue Bloods and the teams every year that are around, John Calipari's got basically just a slow walk now across the road to get back into the Final Four as they play Kansas State and then potentially the winner of either Loyola, Chicago, or Nevada. But
and they
could be
stunk
facing
most
a 9
of the year.
And an 11 seed to get to the Final Four.
They stunk most of the year. Now all of a sudden they win the SEC tournament. They're hot at the right time. Cal, I don't think it's enough credit for being as good of a basketball coach as he is. It's like, oh, he's such a great recruiter. No, that dude can coach. And he does a really good job of molding his teams and getting them by this time of the year to be playing as well as they can be, and this is just another example of that, really.
2-11 seeds still around. You know all about Syracuse, still dancing. They're getting ready for Duke in the Midwest. I think that's a terrible matchup for them.
We're going to get smoked.
Probably, but I think that very few people would have had them remaining at this point, two wins and a win over Michigan State still after being the last
team in. I had them over
in
TCU. They've got a couple talented offensive players in Tyus Battle and O'Shea Brissett. Brissett's a freshman. Battle, actually, the best thing that happened to Syracuse yesterday was Frank Howard, their point guard, fouled out, so Tyus Battle felt like he had to take every shot. And this is the same thing he did against Georgetown here, where it's like, yeah, no, you're the best player on the floor. You shoot. Everyone else is bad at it. And hopefully, I mean, that's really their best chance against Duke, is him trying to take over offensively. But what's really interesting about that matchup is both teams play the same exact 2-3 zone. Mike Krzyzewski learned the principles of the 2-3 from Boeheim on the Olympic teams over the past couple of years, And this year, when Duke couldn't guard anybody, they made the flip to the zone, and they've been much, much better defensively since then.
Including in this tournament where they've impressed people. I mentioned Loyola Chicago, an 11 seed. They are the last Cinderella trying to see if the slipper fits here. A team that won this tournament in the 60s and hasn't been in the tournament since 85. They've got a team chaplain who's a nun named Sister Jean, who's almost 100 years old, who sits
Star.
Next to the bench.
Star.
She's my favorite thing about this tournament. They spent about $500,000 on basketball at that school. Just as a comp, they might play Kentucky around from now. They spent over $3 million on hoops. But the Nevada come-from-behind win may have been the best thing of the weekend, coming back from down 22 under 11 to play.
I can't believe Florida State won last night either.
That was a great game. A Michigan's buzzer beater over Houston, outstanding. And then you've still got a couple of really impressive high seeds as well. For all of the talk about the teams that haven't handled their business, Villanova's been outstanding. Duke has been tremendous. Kansas got a scare from a pretty game Seton Hall group, but they, as a one seed, are still dancing. So you got some chalk on the right side of your bracket, particularly in the East, where almost everyone who was supposed to come out did, and in the Midwest, where Kansas and Duke could still be in line for an Elite Eight matchup. But this has just been so fun. Speaking of fun, the Redskins have three big-name veteran defensive players in their building today for interviews. Are they going to sign any of these guys? And which should they sign first? We'll get into that next on Grant and Danny here on 106.7 The Fan. Hey, guys, it's Grant Paulson for EMP 180 Weight Loss. You've been hearing about EMP for about a year because I've been on the program since December. And what that means is, number one, I lost 70-plus pounds. Number two, I have kept the weight off. Even at times where I've got to go to an event or go do something and I can't always dictate terms on what I'm going to eat, EMP 180 Weight Loss gets me right back on track. And if you have a day where it doesn't go completely your way, you're right back on the program the next day because it's a complete lifestyle change. EMP 180 is based on science, it's based on fact, it's based on numbers, and that's what I like about it. I also like the accountability of getting on that scale, being coached up day in, day out, and every single week with my appointments with an actual nutritionist who's telling me about the things that I'm putting in my body. You've got to give them a call at 855-888-0180. That's 855-888-0180, or go to emp180weightloss.com. And get started. You're going to thank me later. Grant, Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Craig Hoffman is in for Danny today. The Redskins are about to get busy. They've got three defensive free agents in their building for meetings, physicals, this morning and this afternoon at Redskins Park in Ashburn. We'll run through the names here for you, and we'll open up the phones as well on the Hadid Carpet Cleaning listener lines. 800-636-1067 is how you can give us a shout. Question being, which of these three players is your priority? And I'd also like to get you guys to rank the order in which you'd like to bring them in. Who would help the Redskins the most right away? 800-636-1067. But here is who Washington will be meeting with. We'll start with the news from late last night that Pernell McPhee, a linebacker who spent the first 4 years of his career with the Ravens, the last 3 years of his career with the Bears, is going to be meeting with the team. He is due for a physical this morning after beginning the meeting last night. He's entering his eighth season. He is a Florida native who grew up in the Orlando area, played his college ball at Mississippi State. He and Preston Smith have that in common. He has been ravaged by injuries the last couple years, Craig. If you look at 2016, he missed 7 games. This past year, he missed 3 more games. He's gone from being a really good backup, basically role player in Baltimore. Think of him almost like as a Trent Murphy, starting caliber player who's not on the field for starting snaps all the time, to just being a rarely used piece in Chicago until situationally used pass rushing opportunities because of his lack of health. But he has had no fewer than 4 sacks in 4 consecutive seasons, which for a guy who has not been a starter is somewhat impressive. He can play outside. He's a pass rusher at 29 years old. And at 6'3", 270, he actually runs pretty well. You can throw him inside occasionally and have him come downhill, which is what the Bears did with him. I'm intrigued by this. I would be really curious about the price, though, because he's going to be 30, and he gets hurt all the time.
Yeah, the injury thing, I mean, he started the 2016 season on PUP and then wound up, or started the preseason at least on PUP, and then 2017 wound up on that list again. Actually, 2016, he was on it for the first 6 weeks or whatever that time window is. And then by 2017, he was on it in the preseason. And then he's on IR by the end of the 2017 season, so which is, of course, last year. So this is a guy that's been banged up, but as you said, has been super productive. I mean, for that limited amount of time, and you figure a lot of that time he's playing, he's not even healthy, to get 4 sacks in each of those years, 6 sacks in a full season, or an almost full season in 2015, 7.5 in a full season in 2014, you know, and a guy that 2015 season had 42 tackles, so showed some ability to play in space as a flash player. You know, can you recapture some of that in a small dosage? Can he play at that level with a lower number of snaps? I think that's the question. But the real thing with Pernell McPhee is this is try to get leverage on Junior Gallet. Junior Gallet wants to be here. They would like to have Junior Gallet back. They have another, if they got another guy that's willing to take less money, and they're like, look, Junior, this is our offer. Because it's clear if you follow Junior on Twitter, like he said, he's got an offer that he will gladly take, and they haven't given it to him yet. So if they've got another guy and they're like, look, man, we'll sign Pernell McPhee. If you don't want to take our offer, then Gallet's going to have a decision to make.
To that point on Gallet, the tweet that you're referring to is basically he said, I want to be back with the Redskins as well, but it's got to be at a fair deal. And he said that yesterday and hashtagged hail to the Redskins, and Redskins fans went nuts retweeting that. But the point was he was basically sending a message saying, I'm not going to sign for whatever you're offering, so bring your number up. And you're right. Now they bring in Pernell McPhee and they say, listen, dude, we got a guy who can do what you can do if he's healthy, who we might be able to pay a little bit less. I'm curious, obviously, as I mentioned, about the health. But if you go talk to people in Baltimore, I promise you in 2014, this guy was a baller.
Yeah.
To have 7.5 sacks and not start a single game is super hard to do.
That's impressive.
And 4 sacks each of the last 2 years, as much as he's been sidelined, a 4-sack season when he played in 19 games and never really started, and we're talking basically came on the field for third downs, because think about Junior Gallet. If you get 4 sacks, how many pressures is that? How many times were you almost at
Gallet
the quarterback?
Lived in the backfield
exactly.
By the end of last year.
So I am very interested in Pernell McPhee. The guy that I actually think is a must sign that would completely change how I feel about their offseason to this point is Jonathan Hankins. Hankins is only 25, prime of his career from Ohio State. His name should sound familiar as he gets ready to meet with the Redskins today, because they were meeting with him at this time last year, when after 4 years in the NFC East, a couple of them tormenting Washington with the Giants, Jonathan Hankins became one of the higher-profile defensive line free agents. And you can go back and pull the audio of Danny and I screaming about wanting this guy 1 season ago. He went to Indianapolis, played all but 1 game, and he played really well. Now, he's not going to put up numbers. This is a 4-3 defensive tackle with the Colts, and he'll be a 3-4 outside 5-tech end with the Redskins, but they could kick him in and play him at the nose at 325 pounds as well. He's going to be a space eater, a smart car that's tough to move, a guy that is going to help against the run. If you have some time today, I'm going to retweet it in a minute. Jump on Twitter and check out some of the videos being posted of this guy against the run last year. He is a force in the middle, the likes of which the Redskins need. To me, he's the caliber of player where if you go get him, I'm never going to be upset if they draft another defensive lineman in the draft. But the people that are clamoring for like a Vita Vea or some kind of player like that, you'd be getting that in Hankins. Now, because of that, Craig, it's going to cost money. I don't think you could do a one-year, $4 million deal with this guy.
No.
The market for the defensive line, anyone with baggage, see Mo Wilkerson got the one-year show-me contract. Sheldon Richardson, who's had some headache problems with teams in the past, had a one-year, much higher, but show-me contract. Hankins doesn't have any of those issues.
No,
so my guess is it's going to be a three-year deal where you're paying him a bunch of money. Maybe he'll take a one-year contract because it's so late in free agency and he feels like he'd get a bidding war started next year. But I love this player. And I'm telling you right now, Craig, if they sign him, I'm going to be jacked up.
Yeah, no, that is the proper level of excitement. I mean, this guy can play. The only reason he's available is Indianapolis is switching schemes with Matt Patricia coming in as their new head coach, and he just doesn't fit what they want to do. And rather than try to fit a square peg in a round hole, they said, hey, man, why don't you go somewhere you can be successful? We'll let you go. They eat the contract. It is what it is.
Any idea what about Patricia's scheme he wouldn't fit in?
They're switching to 4-3.
Right. But with Patricia, he played 4-3 in New York and had his best seasons, really, as a 4-3 defensive tackle. I wonder if he'd be interested in doing that or if it's the team doesn't want him to.
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird because he definitely, you know, he played 3-4. He's a classic 3-4M, but as you mentioned, they did play 4-3. The Giants for years have been a 4-3 team.
Right.
Those down linemen, obviously, you think back to Strahan and Mathias Kiwanuka and all those guys, Justin Tuck.
It was probably 4 years ago or 3 years ago now. It was his first or second year in the league. They would kick him outside on passing downs at like 320 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And he would basically go one-on-one and bull rush tackles. And he'd end up in the backfield all the time. He had 7 sacks that year.
Yeah, his second year in the league. He was 22 years old. Had 7 sacks. It's crazy. You know, the guy's averaging between 20 and 30 tackles a year, too. So he makes plays on top of that. Like, this is a guy that is a really good football player. And I tend to agree with you. This is the kind of guy that changes what you need or it changes the scope of your offseason. You know, we said last week, hey, what's the grade for the Redskins so far, right? Well, it's somewhere in the B. I think I gave him a B, you gave him a B minus. And he said, I don't really know how they get an A because I don't know if there's a game changer left out there on the market. Well, this guy, I don't know if he pushes it to A, but it's real close. Like, this is a you know, we're moving from, I'm guessing for you, from like B minus to B plus.
Yeah, I would consider an A potentially, depending on the numbers in the contract.
Right.
And then obviously the draft. But I came into the offseason saying they have to get an impact defensive lineman.
Right.
That was my number one goal. That was my number one plan. They need to get someone on the D-line who is a difference maker. They can't just keep signing the Kendall Reyeses, the Terrell McClains, the Stacy McGees. I want a guy who you game plan against. And I believe, I genuinely do, on running downs, you got to know where Jonathan Hankins is. You got to double and chip him. You got to help against him. And there's no one else on this team right now. Maybe Jonathan Allen becomes that guy that you can say that about from the second half of last year.
And with Zach Brown back in the fold and Mason Foster back in the fold, two guys that get downhill as well as anyone on run plays, if you can have a guy up front who eats blocks, those dudes are going to have monster seasons.
How intrigued should we be by Orlando Scandrick coming over from Dallas? We'll get into that next. We will take your calls on not only Scandrick as a possible Redskin, but what would you make of signing Jonathan Hankins? What about Pernell McPhee, the former Raven and Chicago Bear? And rank those players in the order of who you'd most want next. 800-636-1067. We'll do the same on Grant and Danny. Craig, in for Danny today on The Fan.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
They're down by 2 scores. Newton, pocket collapses. Newton is sacked. Pernell McPhee. McPhee circled around Khalil.
My guy, Ian Eagle, on the call on CBS. Welcome back. Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Pernell McPhee has racked up sacks in his career as a pass rusher. Will his next sack come wearing burgundy and gold? That's the question. He's meeting with the Redskins today, age 29, entering year 8 out of Mississippi State. Jonathan Hankins, big defensive tackle, played in New York with the Giants. 1 year in Indianapolis. They've got a new coach. They are rebuilding, and they're blowing up their operation right now. So he's going to be out of a job, not because he wasn't good last year, but because they're changing schemes and he's not a great fit and they pay him a lot of money. So Washington's got a chance to do what it couldn't do last year, which is sign him. I hope that they do. The third player we haven't really gotten into, we're going to get to the phones next, 800-636-1067. And again, 3's a crowd today. These guys are going to be seeing each other in the hallways as they take their physicals and have their meetings with different position coaches. Orlando Scandrick, you guys should know all about him. He has picked off several passes against the Redskins over the years, about 5'10", 200 pounds, went to Boise State way back about 10 years ago. And ever since, he's been with the Dallas Cowboys in the NFC East. He, too, has missed a lot of games. I think there was a suspension for him at one point. He's also been injured several times. He missed 5 games this past year, 4 games the year before that. He has only played 16 games once since 2010. But remember, We're talking about a guy because he's 31 and he's going to be 32 at the end of this football season, who you're probably not going to pay a lot of money to. Like, I don't think you're going to get Orlando Scandrick, who's played some safety and some corner and some slot, and that's what he would be doing here, is playing on the inside, is my guess. You're not going to pay him a lot, Craig. You're bringing him in to play in the nickel, a la the conversations they've been having with Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie, to basically have a veteran corner added to this group. My guess is that it would be a couple million bucks or so for a year, two for four, something like that. On the cheap, I am intrigued. Anything more than a deal that's a little bit over the minimum for a veteran, I'll let him go somewhere else. But I love Hankins. I like McPhee. Scandrick will be my third biggest priority of these three.
I tend to agree with you. I think, like McPhee, though, this is in some ways to put pressure on another guy they want more. I think this is a little bit of pressure on Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie, a fellow older corner who's still been a little bit more productive more recently than Scandrick, and also has some position flex where you feel comfortable with him outside, inside, or at free safety if you really get in a bind. So I do think that Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie and Junior Gallette are still favored over Orlando Scandrick and Pernell McPhee, but those guys will get cheaper. And the question is, are you going to get what you pay for? How healthy can they stay? How productive can they be? And for how many games? And Scandrick, I actually know Scandrick a little bit, or at least more familiar with him, because obviously I covered him when I was down in Dallas. And I will say this about Orlando. This dude is a dog. You want to talk about a guy who plays with attitude, a guy who plays with toughness, a guy who will get in other people's faces, a guy who's not afraid to come up and play the run, a guy who will match the attitude and energy of a DJ Swearinger, of a Josh Norman in terms of intensity. Orlando Scandrick fits in that room in that way. How does that energy manifest itself if he's not playing? I tend to think he's matured to the point at the age of 30 that he'd be fine if all of a sudden, like, he's not going to cause a problem if he's not playing. If Josh Holsey beats him out, I mean, he understands where he is in his career. You read the goodbye letter to Dallas, and it shows a maturity that I don't think a younger Orlando Scandrick necessarily had. But if you talk about a guy who likes to play with attitude and who would bring an intensity, and sometimes you need that. You need guys to come in and play with an intensity that weren't there previously. Because some of that intensity wears on people, a guy who keeps it fresh, Orlando Scandrick could be that guy.
So let me see how different your opinion is than mine on these three guys. I'm going to give you, I think this is the easiest way to do it, which is why I default a lot of times to the 1 to 10 scale in my life. Mm-hmm. 1 to 10 interest level in these three names the Redskins are meeting with. For me, Jonathan Hankins is a 9. Pernell McPhee is probably a 6. Orlando Scandrick is like a 4.5, 5. That's about where I am on these guys. How would you come in?
I think I'm an 8 on McPhee, an 8 on Hankins. The only reason I'm not higher is because I think they're in a good position in the draft to get that guy, too. So it's not like you need him. I think there's still really good.
Adding it with money so that now in the draft you can kind of let the board dictate a little bit of what you do. In other words, if you go into the draft without getting Hankins, right?
Right.
You need probably to address the front 7 and the top 13. Whereas if you don't, I'm not saying they should ever draft like Darius Geis, but my point is, if something happens, Saquon Barkley's not going to be available, but something crazy takes place, you don't have the major need of a defensive line.
Right, exactly. But I think they are in good position that Daron Payne or Vita Vea is going to be available to them at 13. So it's not, I don't think they're dead in the water if they don't. Like, I don't think they're going to enter next year without another impact defensive lineman. But if they can guarantee that now, and then, I mean, no rule says you can't get two. You can't not draft, there's no rule that says you can't draft Vea because you signed Jonathan Hankins, a guy who can play nose and can play one or three technique when you go nickel and have four down. So you could get both. That's the kind of the interesting thing about that signing, but why it's an 8 instead of a 9 or a 10 for me. I would say McPhee's like a 5 because I still want Gallette more. Scandrick's a 3 or a 4. Would like Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie more. The thing is, I would love to see them get some competition in for Josh Holsey and Josh Holsey to win that competition. That is my number That's one seed in terms of favorable outcomes.
I care way more about the competition than who wins it. To me, it
doesn't
matter.
Of course.
Step one before step two. Yes, they have to add help in the slot. Let's go to EJ in D.C. 3 meetings for the Redskins today with veteran defensive players. What's your temperature on these names?
I'm not big on neither one of them because it seems like we're doing the same thing year after year. We coming up with the second round free agents. We're not getting the Muhammad Wilkinsons. We're not getting the Sheldon Richardson. We're not getting the Dominican Sues. We always seem to be taking that second-tier player that's out there that nobody else wants.
Well,
from
say
what
this,
I'm
CJ,
seeing,
you
know, is,
I want you to react. I'm not going to cut you off. But
okay.
Jonathan Hankins is a lot closer to the guys you're talking about than he is to Pernell McPhee or Orlando Scandrick. Hankins is a marquee
free agent. Yes, without a doubt. Without a doubt. I agree. But what I'm saying is, when are we going to start getting the Muhammad Wilkinses and them type of players?
Well, if you get Jonathan Hankins today, then today is the answer. My point is, if Jonathan Hankins was a free agent when the market opened, there are people that would have ranked him right up there, maybe ahead of Mo Wilkerson because he's less of a head case.
Yep.
100%. This is one of the best defensive linemen available this offseason. I would have put Richardson ahead of him, but I think he's in the Dontari Poe conversation.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Poe just re-signed signed a new contract, I should say, but re-signed to stay in his division at $8 million per year. So your point is the one I make all the time. Enough with the Terrell McClains. This is not another Terrell McClain. I understand that it's March 19th and you're a week into free agency. He became available a couple days ago by surprise, and if you pounce on him now, I think it's a big deal. By the way, the Redskins have actually done a good job where they could at keeping some of their own. One of the guys they retained was kicker Dustin Hopkins. He's going to join the show in about 5 minutes. Want to figure out why he wanted to stay in Washington? We'll chat with him about coming back to the Skins and what he's doing this offseason. He just hit me up. He is out of town. We'll tell you what he's been doing to improve himself next on Grant and Danny on The Fan.
So now a 22-yard field goal try by Hopkins, who hit from 41 in the opening quarter. Chip shot here. And it is good. So that's a win for the Rams, even though they're being shut out 13-0.
Dustin Hopkins is automatic. When he's asked to come on the field, the Redskins get points. He is staying in Washington, re-upping with the team last week. He'll be joining us in just a moment here on Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. I want to let you know that Dave Martinez down at Nats Spring Training has formally announced the Nationals' rotation. We will give you the details on the order of their pitchers to begin the season early next hour. So Nats fans will be talking about the starting rotation when we get back into the tournament as well, just after 11 o'clock. Kimberly Martin's going to join us to talk free agency from the Washington Post. 12 minutes from now, she wrote a great story about Doug Williams and Bruce Allen pulling off the Alex Smith trade with some fascinating details we've got to ask her about. But right now, on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline, Dustin Hopkins does join us, the kicker for your Washington Redskins. 14 of 17 last year, missed half the season, came back strong at the end of the year, and then got a new contract with the team. Dustin, were you ever worried that you were going to have to move on and go find work elsewhere? Were you confident all along that you and the Redskins would get a deal done?
You know, my wife and I like it here, but, you know, in this business, you never know what teams are thinking and how things are going to shake out. So we're glad to stay. But, I mean, sure, there were times Nick came in and you know, did a good job while he was in D.C. And so there's obviously times where you kind of think to yourself, well, we'll see what the team does. So I'm glad it worked out. But, yeah, there were times where we were unsure.
Give us an idea, because I don't think most people have a good understanding of the negotiation. Is it like several weeks on end where your agent and the team are going back and forth, or is it basically no talking at all, then they throw a number out there and within a couple days a deal's agreed upon? How did it work?
So it's funny, I just learned myself, you know, so I'm just like everybody else out there. But you know, I think as a season ends, there's kind of a little bit of a silent period, and I think both the team and the player typically kind of are looking at the landscape that the league's presenting, you know, what players are available or should be available depending on who resigns and who doesn't, and things of that nature. And then we're looking at teams as a player like, okay, where are some spots that might open up? So I think that kind of takes place. And then as you get closer, the team and you, I guess, start to feel each other out. And then as you get toward the tampering period, you kind of have an idea of what teams that your agent needs to talk to or what teams will reach out. And then based on those conversations, try to figure out what your value is and then make a deal. So, and you know, you take things into consideration as a player, like for example, in DC, we know the area, we know the organization, we know the coaches, we know the fans are great. And we know that, you know, hopefully we can build upon something that we feel like we've been really close to. And you can kind of feel that early in the year last season of just being right there onto something that could be really special. So you take things like that in consideration and figure out where you want to be.
Dustin Hopkins with us on The Fan. Craig Hoffman in today for Danny on Grant and Danny. Dustin, when these guys would ask me as the reporter, like, hey, what's happening with their own free agents? You were always a guy I mentioned, and I go, look, they want him back clearly, and I'm not sure why this is taking so long. Were you surprised that you got that close to free agency, or your expectations after the year ended that you were going to have to kind of wait it out a little bit, and it wouldn't just be one of those, hey, let's get you done and out of the way so we can move on to other things?
Right, right. Well, here, let me answer that shortly. But Craig, they need to throw an intro your way on the show, man. You know, if we're going to have you on, they need to mix you in.
Rejoins that say Craig's name.
Yeah, just throw it in there. It can be dubbed, just the same thing, and all of a sudden it just kind of jumps in there. Craig.
It would sound like really like overly produced. Like,
I think we should
Grant
do that.
And
is
Craig.
Brock here? Is Brock here yet?
Yeah,
Brock,
yeah.
Brock can probably do that. One of our afternoon producers, very good. Lots of laser sound effects when he does it, so we'll get Brock on there.
Pew, pew, pew.
I wouldn't be bad at all.
Exactly.
I like that.
Anyway,
he sounds like a DJ.
Sorry.
Yeah. Sounds like he spent some time in a nightclub.
Dustin, I feel like, has a lot of hidden talents that we haven't uncovered yet. That's probably all I care about this season is uncovering your hidden talents. Forget all my other reporting duties.
That's the next interview. There you go.
Well, so you're going to answer my question?
In the meantime. yes, here we go. So I didn't know. We love it in D.C. But that being said, I wanted to be fairly compensated, just like any player. Like, and I realize that teams are trying to get the best value for their player, so therefore get guys cheap. And I think, and that's any team. So I think that in of itself is the reason that it carried on as long as it did. I think both parties knew that we liked each other, but I knew they don't want to overpay, and I don't want to be overpaid or underpaid. And I guess kind of finding that middle ground just took a little longer than I might have guessed, but I really didn't know. Like I said, I'm learning about free agency myself by going through it and talking to people that have been through it and talking to my agent. So I really didn't have any preconceived notion of what the timeline was going to be. I just know as that tampering period approaches, it kind of puts the intensity on negotiations up for both sides.
I remember talking to you about this in training camp last year, but just kind of invite everyone else in here. We think of a football offseason, guys out there running, lifting weights. For a kicker, though, and probably a little bit different, but also some of the same. Give people an idea of what your offseason training program looks like and how you have to stay sharp but also manage not doing too much kicking.
Right, right. You know, I kind of the older you get, the more your body just kind of has that muscle memory of you know your swing, and you kind of work on a handful of things in the offseason. So and there's only so many swings in your leg kind of throughout a career, so you don't want to overkick. So during the off season, I take like about a month off after the season to not kick at all. And I'll just balance my body out with like yoga. I don't lift as heavy because I've kind of lifted heavy all the season. So kind of yoga and running and kind of cross training, doing things that you don't normally do throughout the year. And then after that month's up, you'll jump into a normal weight program that Chad and the guys have worked on. Chad, Jake, Kavan, those guys in the weight room have made a program for me, and I'll go and do that. So at this point, it's a 3 or 4 days a week lifting, and then I'll have a day of kind of like running in there, and I'll kick once a week at this point, and then I'll kind of ramp up the kicking days as we get closer to OTAs.
Dustin, real quick,
so that's kind of how that works.
I'm curious, did you see the Pro Bowl kind of back and forth tic-tac-toe game that Graham Gano played against? I can't remember who he was kicking against.
I don't remember
either.
Did
you see that?
I did see it. Yes, I did. That's kind of an interesting game. I wouldn't have.
So for people that don't know, so two Pro Bowl kickers from each conference went head-to-head in a tic-tac-toe game where basically they had this digital board inside the uprights where you had the nine squares and they had to kick for X's or O's to block each other. It was awesome. I know people joke sometimes about like, oh, I'm going to practice, I'll watch kickers kicking. It was the coolest thing I saw in the skills competition. I thought it was a blast. Would you participate in something like that?
Oh, that's awesome. Well, of course. You know, it, it's kind of interesting. You know, kickers were taught that every kick should be the same, whether it's from like 50 or 20 or from the left or right hash, every kick's supposed to be a straight kick. So it's funny, like that game kind of takes that all away and it's like, okay, hit a low line drive, hit a high ball, hit a, you know, it makes it tough. So I did find it really interesting watching those guys. It was fun.
Dustin, it's awesome having you on the show, man. We're pumped that you're back in D.C. Congrats on getting the deal done with the Redskins, and I hope to have you back on the show a bunch in the coming year.
Hey, hope to talk to you soon, man. Appreciate y'all having me on.
Hey, Dustin. Dustin Hopkins, awesome guy. Really fun to talk to. And he's a good kicker. Two of the three seasons he's been here, he's made all of his kicks but three or fewer, and he's got a big, strong leg.
And he's got good laser sound effects.
Great laser sound effects. You'll probably hear those again. We got an update coming up in less than 4 minutes at the top of the hour.
Big and there is breaking NBA news.
Massive NBA news to get to. Monstrous news that you're going to hear from Pete Medhurst coming up at 11. We'll react to that. And Kimberly Martin of the Post is going to join us to talk about the Alex Smith trade, how it went down, who was involved, and what happened in the front office to lead to the deal. Grant and Dan on the Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.